Welcome back to Lounge with Books. I'm Sophie.
And I'm Claire.
And today we are joined by the wonderful Sophie Anderson. So, Sophie, introduce yourself. Who are you and what books have you written?
Hello. Well, my name's Sophie Anderson and I'm the author of The House with Chicken Legs, The Girl Who Speaks Bear, and The Castle of Tangled Magic. So, The House with Chicken Legs is about a girl who lives in a house which has chicken legs. And her grandmother is a Baba Yaga, which means she's a kind of guardian of the dead. And she's destined to become the next guardian, to guide the dead from this world to the next world. But she really doesn't want that job. She just wants to have a normal life and to make friends. So it's a story about, it's about loneliness and it's about death and it's about breaking free of the boundaries put around you, I think, and speaking out, striking out to make your own destiny. The Girl Who Speaks Bear is, this is tricky because I don't want to do any spoilers. Basically, it's about a girl who was found in a bear cave when she was about 2 years old, and she's been brought up in the village by a foster mother, but she still feels this amazing connection to the forest, and she hears animals, and she wants to know about her past. And then something happens, and she decides, that's it, I have to go into the forest and find out where I'm really from. And it's a story about belonging and finding your place. And The Castle of Tangled Magic, my latest book, is it's a magical porthole adventure, which means, so basically the main character, Olia, finds a doorway into another world. And she goes through that doorway and she discovers a magical land. And she has to go on a sort of quest there in order to save her own home.
So Claire and I have recently both read The Castle of Tangled Magic, and we just had a few thoughts about the book that we wanted to chat with you about. So when I read it, I felt like it was very much like Alice in Wonderland meets Narnia. Did you think about those books when you were writing this one?
I think a little bit, yeah, because I think as soon as, like very early on, I decided it was going to be a magical porthole adventure. And obviously those are perhaps the two most famous ones, Alice in Wonderland and Narnia. There's a few other ones that I like, but obviously I think they definitely inspired me because, you know, there are a few books on this theme of going into another world and having an adventure there and coming back. And I've always wanted to write a book like that because it's just so freeing because you can invent your own world entirely, much like Wonderland or Narnia. You have all the freedom to create this world and populate it with all the things you love. And, they were definitely an inspiration. Both of those books I loved as a child. And my children still love them today as well.
Yes, Olia, she definitely went on a whirlwind of an adventure, excuse the pun. What I really loved is the blanket idea. You know, when they were creating the blanket and she'd got her square ready. Where did you come up with the idea for the blanket?
That's a really good question, actually, because that came in a later edit, actually. So I have an editor I work with, Rebecca, and I think we'd gone through two drafts and there wasn't a blanket. And also there wasn't a little sister as well, strangely enough. And my editor kept saying she felt like there needed to be another tie for her to want to come back to the real world, you know, like another draw to come back to the real world. So I sort of came up with a few different ideas of things that might really tie her, that might symbolise her tie back home. And I came up with the patchwork blanket idea, I think because I have a blanket that my grandmother made me. And of all that, I try not to get too attached to possessions, but I have a few things like that that were made by people that I love. And they really symbolise for me home and my grandmother, who's no longer with us. But, you know, I can kind of wrap myself in that blanket and still feel her. So I thought having a blanket or a patch that was like a really symbolised home and Olia could carry it with her. She has a patch in her pocket. And so it's one of those things she can touch and it can remind her of home. And so it reminds the reader of this link between, you know, how much Olia wants to go home. So it's a very symbolic thing, basically.
I thought it was a lovely idea. It took me back to thinking, oh, I wish I'd done something like that with, you know, with my babies when they were growing up. But I bet there's a few people now sort of thinking after reading the book, oh, I'm going to do that. It's such a lovely idea. There were some really interesting characters in the book. I know I tweeted about the fact that I really like Golof. Is that how you say it? Golof?
Yes.
The big head.
The word actually means head in Russian. Some of the names. Yeah, so some of the names in the book are really, they're quite unimaginative when you think about it. Like Koshka means cat and Golof means head. So, but yeah, see, that's borrowed. The book was very much inspired by an old poem written by Alexander Pushkin, and which it's called Ruslan and Ludmilla. And some of the characters are borrowed from that poem. And Golof is one of those. There is a giant head in Ruslan and Ludmilla, and there is the wizard Chernomor, and there is the cat. So I almost think of the Castle of Tangled Magic as it's almost like an imagined sequel to that Pushkin poem. Some of the characters are borrowed, yes.
I mean, when we look at all of your books, Sophie, there's quite a huge link to them in like Russia or Prussia. Why is that?
That's where my grandmother was from, Prussia, and she's probably the biggest influence on me creatively. She told me lots of stories from that part of the world when I was growing up. So I didn't decide to become a writer until I was in my 30s. And it was because I was thinking about the stories I wanted to pass on to my children. So naturally, I started to think about the stories I'd been told as a child. And my grandmother had told me these stories from Eastern Europe. So it was those stories that I wanted to reimagine and pass on to my own children.
Do you think as you move forward writing more, I mean, I'm assuming you're going to be writing more books, but do you think you'll carry on writing books set in Prussia and around these folk tales?
I have wondered that. The next one definitely is. And there's still quite a few things from that neck of the woods that inspire me. So yes, potentially. I'm personally Welsh myself. I was born there. So sometimes I wonder whether I'll do some Welsh mythology. Like I'm writing a short story this month, actually, for a compilation of old Welsh folk stories, which is going to be called The Mab. So that's kind of my first time in a long time writing something that isn't Eastern European inspired. But yeah, I'm not sure. I've never said never to anything. So yeah, I think there's going to be more yet.
Just for a few of the listeners, the younger listeners who might not know where Prussia is, can you just describe where Prussia is for them?
Yes, it doesn't exist anymore. It's my grandmother grew up, it was called Prussia, so that's what she would call it. But after the Second World War, all the borders were changed. So where she grew up is actually, well, she grew up in two places, and one is now in Poland and one is now in Russia. But when she grew up, they were in the same area that was called Prussia. But that whole place, it was a place that has a very, very long history and its own culture. But sadly, it was all lost after the war, basically, and it was split up and all the places have been renamed, and they're either now in Poland or Russia, or I think small parts of them are in Germany as well. So it's that kind of Eastern European area. But yes, it doesn't exist anymore.
Olya, she went on quite a journey for herself, really, because she was, I wouldn't describe her as weak at the beginning, but she was a bit sort of uncertain and not sure whether she could do something. And then, you know, she gets involved with all her little adventures, and it's a real life-changing experience for her, isn't it?
Yes, definitely it is. It's essentially about her learning to believe in herself. And I think when I write books, I think at their heart there has to be a personal journey that readers can relate to. So for Marinka in The House with Chicken Legs, it was that, you know, loneliness and finding friends. And for Yanka in The Girl Who Speaks Bear, it was discovering where she belongs. And for Olya, it is, as you say, exactly about learning to believe in herself and trust herself. And I think if you have that core theme that all readers can relate to, then, you know, then that's really what makes a book special. And the magic and the wonder, it's almost like a dressing, if you see what I mean. It makes it nice, but it's really that core, those core personal things that readers relate to, and that's what makes you want to read on.
Now, your books, all three of them, Sophie, have seen huge success. How have you managed the workload? Because I'm sure when you wrote your first book, you didn't expect to see yourself going so far and being so well revered by many children.
And people also think that it happens overnight. I was writing for like 10 years before I got published. So but then it does happen very quickly, like you say. And I think with the first book, the moment it became Waterstones Book of the Month, everything just roller coasted massively. So I did have to, it took a while to get my feet, but I did have to find ways of working and protecting my time. I have four children now. So I have to quite fiercely protect my time with them, and I have to protect my time writing, because people don't realise how much other stuff people ask you to do as an author. You know, you have them, lots of it I love the school visits and chatting with things like this, but you do have to learn to manage your time and say, right, I'm going to protect this time for writing and this time for my family, and then I have this amount of time I can give to the schools and for other projects. And then, yeah, it's tricky, but I think whatever job you end up in, you do have this kind of constant struggle of, you know, trying to maintain a work-life balance and trying to manage your time so it's most productive. So I never get it completely right, but I'm getting there slowly, I think.
When you are writing, do you take yourself off to a separate room, or do you have a little shed in the garden? Is there any little procedures you do to write your books, Sophie?
Last year we moved into a new house, so for the last year I have had, well, it's actually a room that we call the library that we do all share, because it has all the books in it. It has my desk in it as well, and it's the first time that I have had a room that I can retreat to, and I can shut the door and I can say, right, I'm writing. And then obviously sometimes, a lot of the time, my children, you know, respect that, and I'll make sure they have other things to do, and my husband is really supportive. But obviously they come in and interrupt me as well, which is absolutely fine, because my priority is always them. But it is nice definitely to have a separate space where I can spend some time writing and really focus on it, especially now because I have deadlines. In the early days, I was just writing for fun, but now I always have deadlines to work towards. So especially as a deadline comes up, I do need to say, right, well, I'm having a writing day, and I disappear away from everybody.
So we're now going to ask you some student questions. So there was one question from Madeleine, and she said, did you have any other jobs before you were a writer?
Yes, I had lots of jobs. I didn't decide to be a writer till I was 30. So I had lots of like just small jobs in shops and things. My first job after I went to university and I studied geology, which is the science of rock and the earth. And my first job was actually as an analytical chemist in a laboratory. And then I had a job working as an exploration geologist, which meant that I got to go around lots of sites looking at the soil and rocks and writing reports about the ground and what people could do there. And after a few years of that, I became a science teacher. So I worked in secondary school as a science teacher for quite a few years. And it was when I was on maternity leave from teaching that I actually started writing. And as I say, I wrote for a long time without being published, so without making any money. So during that time, I carried on teaching as well. And it's only really the last few years that I've given up teaching, and I just focus entirely on my writing now.
I have a question from Maisie. We've kind of already answered this, but so she asked, who was your inspiration when writing The House with Chicken Legs?
Yeah, yes, it's a lovely question. As I mentioned, it was hugely, it was my grandmother for the mythology and the folklore. But other inspirations are definitely Marinka, the main character, was inspired by my children, especially perhaps my eldest child, who's a girl. And because at the time I wrote The House with Chicken Legs, she was reaching that age where she wanted more freedom and she was striking out for independence. And that's what Marinka's doing as well. You know, so Marinka actually literally wants to climb over the fence and go into the world. And at the time, my eldest daughter was, you know, trying to climb over sort of metaphorical fences and have more and more freedom. So my daughter was a big inspiration too. And then I think a lot of death aspects of the book were inspired. I do, sadly, in the couple of years before The House with Chicken Legs was written, I lost quite a few people in my family died. So that was obviously an influence as well. I wanted to write about death in a positive way to help me get over it, help me get through my grief, and hopefully to help other people get through grief. So it was a combination of all those things, I think.
Neve asks, what made you decide to become a writer?
It's strange because I didn't really make an active decision. I don't remember a point where I thought I really want to become a writer. It was as I say, I was sort of on maternity leave and I started writing just for fun. And then I started writing, I think I wanted to write stories to share with my children. And I didn't really think beyond that. And But then I enjoyed it so much, I sort of became aware that I was doing it for myself more than my children. And I think, I guess at some point after a few years, perhaps after I'd written a whole full-length book, I think it was quite a natural progression to think, well, I wonder if this could actually be published, you know. But the whole idea of becoming published, it felt very much like buying a lottery ticket, because I know a lot of people write books and never get published. So I never really expected to. I did sort of send off books to publishers and agents and quietly hope that I might be, but I never really thought, to be honest, that I would. It was very much a sort of lottery thing where I thought, oh, maybe one day, but probably not, you know. So I feel very lucky to have got this far, to be honest.
Did it take long for The House with Chicken Legs to be published?
House of Chicken Legs, no. I wrote maybe 7 books before it that nobody wanted those. But at the point I sent The House with Chicken Legs off, I think I had 3 rejections, and then I sort of put it away and I thought, well, that's going to be like the other ones. No one's going to want it. And then I was working on something else, so I ignored it for a bit. And then I just saw that an agent that I really liked had asked for submissions, and literally within 24 hours she got back to me and she said, oh, I love this. And after that, it all happened fairly quickly, although quickly for publishing is probably about half a year, to be honest. But as far as it goes, it was pretty fast for a book.
You said you'd written loads of books before Chicken Legs. What makes you kind of ditch your book and go with a different project to present to publishers?
I think, well, it's after a few rejections for a start, because I think after you've had, I used to send them off. Someone told me to send it off in 3s, so I send a book off to 3 publishers or 3 agents. If I got 3 rejections back, I might think I'll try another 3. But after so many rejections, and I think because you're waiting so long for these rejections as well, the best thing to do while you're waiting for a yes or a no is to get on with another project. So I think there comes a point where you're getting these rejections in, but you're actually really excited about your new project anyway. So there is a point where you think, well, I'll just shelve that one and I'll just focus on this new project, you know. And then I kind of I have in my head as well, it's like after maybe, you know, between six and 10 rejections, then perhaps I need to, you know, like look at that book again before I send it off. So I'd sort of shelve it and think, well, I'll come back to that and I will try to make it better. But often I'd be working on something else anyway, you see. So, you know, and I think every time you start something new, slowly you build up excitement for the next thing, don't you? And you think, well, this is going to be even better, so I'm going to put my energy into this one instead.
I have a question from Heridia. She also wanted me to say that she loved The House with Chicken Legs and it's one of her favourite books. Why did you decide not to bring Baba back in the end?
Yes, this is lots of people ask this, and lots of people ask if I would do it, and I can't, basically. I wanted it to be authentic. I wanted it to be real, because I had lost people that I loved in the years before. I know that they don't come back, you know, well, as far as I know, they don't, you know, and so I wanted it to be real. I wanted it to express a real experience going through grief, because sadly, when someone dies, you do have to accept that they're gone, you know, in the way that you knew them anyway. So I wanted that to be real. I thought if I brought her back, it would, it just wouldn't be real to me. I wanted that aspect of the book to be a real experience of death and grief.
She also wanted to know, was the part about the afterlife your beliefs?
Not many people ask this, but I did a lot of research for the afterlife part of the book to do with Slavic mythology. Slavic is myths from Eastern Europe and beliefs from Eastern Europe. And that's where Baba Yaga came from. And Baba Yaga, very ancient forms of her are thought to have been a kind of pagan goddess of life and death. And there's not lots known about that mythology, but I researched everything I could. And a lot of the ideas in the book are genuine beliefs from ancient Slavic pagan people. So the glassy mountains and the journey to the stars are all sort of aspects of Slavic mythology. So I borrowed a lot of it from people's beliefs thousands of years ago. And I do love a lot of those ideas, definitely. But a lot of people back then, they were buried with things for their journey. So they'd be buried with boots, or they'd be buried with like crow claws to help them climb the glassy mountains and things like that. So a lot of the ideas, they really are genuinely, they are people's beliefs from a long time ago.
So, Sophie, this is the part of the podcast where you tell us what you've been reading and kind of the authors that inspired you when you were younger.
The first books I really loved were the Moomin's books by an author called Tove Jansson. And there's lots of them. There's a series of them. And I absolutely adored them as a child. They were the first books I think I really read independently. And I often revisit them. I think I read at least one of them once a year. I've read them all to my children. My children love them. I think they have a lovely mixture of kind of whimsy and fun, but also deep philosophy as well. And they're really beautiful books. And that writer, Tove Jansson, I love all of her work. She's written them. Adult books too, and I love those now. It's quite exciting, actually. One of the exciting things about being a writer is you get to read books before they're published. So you get sent things called proofs, which are copies of the book before they're published, because the publishers are always looking for little quotes from other authors to say why they like a book. So I'm reading a book at the moment called A Glass House of Stars, and it's by a new author called Shirley Marr, and it's not out until June. But it's absolutely wonderful. It's written in second person, which you don't see very often. So second person is where it's written. It's like you walk down the street and you see this and you feel that book. It's a very deep, very thoughtful book about a young girl's experience of migrating to a new land. And it's absolutely blew me away. I think it's an amazing book. And I think it's going to be really massively successful when that comes out in June. So that's one to look out for, called A Glass House of Stars, and it's amazing.
Well, that sounds a great book. We'll definitely look out for that one. Would you like to tell us a little bit about any new projects you've got going
on at the moment? Yes, I've just actually last week I sent off my first draft for my next book. And it's very difficult talking about them in these early stages, because it's going to go through probably at least three big edits. And if I told you too much about it, quite often it changes. You know, like I said earlier about the Castle of Tangled Magic, in the early drafts, Ollie didn't have a baby sister and there was no patchwork blanket. So at the moment, it's set on a floating island and there are humans, but there are also these magical bird people who are based on characters from Slavic mythology called Alkanosts. Yeah, I don't want to say too much. It's about power and it's about friendship more than anything. There's some problems on the island and she's trying to fix that on her own. It's amazing fun. It's interesting because every time I write a new book, it's my favourite. I always think this is wonderful, this is my favourite. But I am aware that I'm going to get my edits back in the next couple of weeks. Inevitably, the whole book will need a massive amount of rewriting, because that's what editing is. So it'll be hard work, but it'll be good, because with every rewrite, it gets better and better. That one, it probably won't be out until next year, because there's still so many edits to do. And there's obviously, we'll have to find an illustrator, and the illustrator will have to do some work. But that's my sort of latest project at the moment. So I'll be doing that for most of the rest of this year. And then I'll think about what's next after that.
Do you find that difficult, Sophie, when you've spent ages on a book and then it comes back with loads of changes? Do you sometimes want to battle with the editor about what can be changed?
I never want to battle with my editor, because I know she's amazing. She works on incredible, incredible books. I think quite naturally, obviously, you finish a draft, you think, right, that's good, I'm happy with that. Inevitably, when you get feedback and you realise how much more work you have to do, there is a moment of, oh, you know, because... You know, part of you would love it to be finished. It would be nice if they wrote back and said, this is perfect, but that's never going to happen. I think at this point now, I've done so many books, I'm very much used to the process. And I'm actually quite excited by edits, because I know when my editor sends the edits, at first there'll be a moment of, oh gosh, there's lots of work to do. But I also know how much better that is going to make the book. You know, I think it was the hardest time I did it was with The House of Chicken Legs, because I hadn't really done a big edit before. But each time I've done it, it has become easier, because I have more trust in the process now. And I know that you can completely pull a book to pieces and rebuild it, and it will come back together better, you know. So, and I do, I trust my editor so much. She's an incredible, incredible lady. I'm excited about it. It will make it better, because I also know I can look at it and I love parts of the book at the moment, but I can see which bits probably need a bit of work. So I'm quite excited about getting back in and fixing those.
We've been interviewing Sophie this week as part of National Storytelling Week, so get out there, explore, celebrate the week and write your own story. It is goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
And goodbye. Thank you very much for all your wonderful questions, and I hope you have amazing fun this week reading and writing stories.